This is a production of Cornell University.
Today is Wednesday, December 5th, meeting of the Employee Assembly. It is 12:20 p.m. Are there any late additions to the agenda? I know, Linda, you want Faculty Senate. Right. Any other additions? Okay. Not hearing any, we'll move on to approval of the minutes from the last meeting. Does anyone have any additions, changes, corrections to the meeting minutes? Okay, hearing no changes, I move that we approve the minutes. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Great, thank you. Okay, moving right in. So business of the day, Lynette and her team will be back at 1 o'clock to talk about towards new destinations. So I'll move right into report from the chair. So the employee survey team met on Monday. Just to give you a little update, we've now elected the chair of that committee, and that is Beth McKinney, sitting right over here, who's going to wrangle the group, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for those of you who are serving on committees, you should have gotten some notification that you either will be having a meeting soon, or you may have just recently had a meeting. But anyone from the EA who is on one of those standing committees, you should now be acting as co-chair. Along with the current lead. So is everyone doing that? I know Leslie, you're on a committee. I don't see Jeannie. David, you're acting as co-chair for supervisor. Has Rick talked to you about that?
No.
Okay. So you will be acting with Rick and Dane as a co-chair of that committee. Jeannie and Bridget on their committees, respectively. So right now the groups are going back and reviewing comments from the survey. So at the meetings, they will be handed comments to read and make sure that what has come out of the survey actually aligns with what they've done in the proposals that have been.
Do we have some comments?
They are not being distributed. When you go to your meeting, they will either be read or handed to you to read at the meeting and then taken back. Because of the confidentiality, we don't want the comments to be floating around to campus. We're trying to keep them as contained as possible. So you'll have those to read and then to follow up with your discussions. And then each committee is reporting out to Beth, and we're reporting to Mary from each committee report because we're trying to be a little more aggressive now in getting things forward. Would you agree, Beth?
Yes. The employee survey team oversees all the subcommittees that you are all co-chairing. And so our job is to keep things on track and moving along and hopefully get something happening beginning of January for all the committees.
So we're not doing the breakout sessions or open forums
now?
We
are not doing this in December because the committees haven't yet met to
right.
make sure that they're in the right spot. So as soon as those committees have met and report back, then we can schedule those.
All right.
So that's kind of the hold on those. And then if any committees, anyone who's on any committees, if they've met, if you have anything to add, do you want to, anyone, I think anybody's?
Not
our education committee, the employee survey committees. Yep, I've got you on your education down here. Did you have anything that you wanted to put out? I know your committee.
I'll just warn anybody when you read the comments, they're very depressing. We had our committee meeting this morning, and it was very hard to read all of those comments. And it was just a small portion of what related to the committee I'm on. So I can't imagine what Mary and the senior leadership have gone through by reading all of them. It was very depressing.
Generally speaking, people that respond to surveys are statistically the ones that are unhappy, whether it's a program, a curriculum, anything in life, are usually the more vocal ones. If there's any silver lining, I mean, if you're doing a good job, that's expected, I guess I would say. So take it with a grain of salt. I mean, it's important, serious to address, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of people that are happy, they just don't take the time to write it.
And just as someone who's read all of the different comments, there were some positive comments,
right.
And there was some positive pieces along with saying, you know, this is great, but this needs some work. And a lot
right.
of the
and
a lot of the right, and a lot of the good stuff was very similar, and a lot of the not so good stuff was very similar. So, I mean, I think that's really good that we're hearing the same kinds of stuff. It's not one off for the most cases. So that's good.
Personal development is a meeting every Friday. And in 6 weeks, I think we went from very different opinions to, I think we have pretty solid proposals. So.
That's good. Anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the last leadership breakfast, we had an opportunity to hear from Kathy Zoner. And Mary, they came in and they talked about safety issues on campus, a lot of what folks have probably already heard, you know, about the blue light bus opportunities. There was a lot of discussion centered primarily around students, and in particular, in some cases, graduate students who don't live right within the, you know, the college town campus corridor here, who are living a little bit further out, and how there isn't really any bus services for that subset of students who may be on campus later in the evenings and having no way to get back and forth except walking. So that kind of stuff is being looked at. And a lot of the, at that leadership meeting, there was discussion of representatives from all groups through the infrastructure committee, which Bridget chairs, to come together and look at transportation as a whole, and particularly on-campus parking options at night for folks, so that people can maybe, you know, is there a way that people can, you know, go home when it's light out, bring a car back to campus if they have one, and then when they're here until 3 in the morning, have something accessible to get them home at night. So they're going to be looking at a whole bunch of different options and putting forward a proposal, not just from each individual assembly, but something collectively from all of us. So when we have Bridget here, she can be at the meeting today, but when we have her back again, hopefully they'll have some new information to share.
Does that include, you said that most of the discussion was about students, but is that specific point including
the parking point? Yes. So you know, a lot of their discussion, because the majority of the people sitting at the table are students, they tend to center the conversation around that. But when it came to, you know, this is not just a problem for students, but it is a problem for some staff, not the majority of staff, but a good portion of staff. So that's why we've decided that the UA Infrastructure Committee would be a good place to work on this, so that the EA isn't coming out with their own individual program just for employees and graduate students theirs and undergrad theirs, but something collective that would put a united front forward. So,
how about busing?
So that's something that they're looking at as well. You know, they have to look and say, okay, you know, if we have a bus run that goes to this location, is it running empty 90% of the time? Because to put a bus run over here, we have to take away a bus run somewhere else. You know, there's not a whole lot of play in there. So all of those different things they're looking at. And Mitch Payne, who's the chair of the GPSA, is actually on the TTAP advisory board. Is that the name of the board that he's on? Do you remember? David shaking his head. So on the TCAT advisory board, so he's working on both ends of it, so he's got a good base knowledge. And that's pretty much what we talked about at Leadership Breakfast. Our next one is next week, and we'll be talking with President Scorton, so hopefully I'll have something to share at our next EA meeting. Moving on to care fund auction. So Beth came and joined us today so that she could talk a little bit about the auction. So I don't know if you want to jump in and say how we did and all that kind of stuff.
Well, let me just start from the beginning. I'll just set the stage, because I think one of the questions that came up was, how is the EAA involved with care fund anymore? And so the care fund used to be called the Emergency Grant Fund. And roughly, I want to say 2 years ago, but I don't really remember, but a period of time ago, recently, the Employee Grant Fund moved out of the EA and into, actually, Lynette Chappelle-Williams area. And so they took it over, and at that time, I volunteered to be the chair. And so I'm coming to you as the chair, but it's housed in the Division of Inclusion and Workforce. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Inclusion. Okay. Anyway, At that time, we made a kind of an informal charter that said there will always be someone from the EA on the committee. And that was pretty much it. We made up this committee, and it's a well-rounded committee of EA people, HR people, at-large people, me, and we've been deliberating the applications that have been coming in. We didn't really do that much with fundraising in terms of setting up a charter, but we've managed the fundraising by, we held two auctions, so I guess we've been around for 2 years, last October and this November. And so last October, the auction brought in roughly $13,000, and this November, the CARE Fund auction brought in roughly $8,000. And an auction and fundraising is really difficult and tricky to run. And so right now, the EA person who's on the CARE Fund committee is the only link that the CARE Fund has to the EA. And if I had my druthers, I would love if the CARE Fund wanted to take an additional role in having some responsibility for the fundraising. And to backtrack even further, the CARE Fund is, right now, the idea of it is it's 100% of employees donating to help other employees who are in a crisis. And that's all it is. It's a wonderful fund, and it's been working so far. And I will just say that there are more people in a crisis than there are donors. And so our balance, we started when we took it over, when the EA was running it, was very stringent. And there was $40,000 sitting in a bank account. And now we're running a negative balance, and we have to keep fundraising a lot. We did get one infusion from Hurricane Lee from Human Resources. That helped bring our balance to zero, and I'm not afraid to ask for more if we need it. Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of fundraising opportunity. Good questions?
And just to tie into what Beth said, the reason why we had so much money before and now we don't is because the fund was limited to use for things like fires and
like complete devastation.
It wasn't you couldn't use it for a multitude of things. You couldn't use it for, you know, you've got an emergency an unexpected medical bill. You couldn't use it for any of those kinds of things. So now that it's been opened up more, we're getting a lot more people.
Yeah, and to be honest, the committee is diligent. And there's a little bit of subjectivity when it comes to deciding, but we like to give, you know, if people feel that they need to apply to the CARE Fund, unless it really doesn't qualify, and there are a few that absolutely do not qualify, usually they qualify for something, but when you look at these people's situations, they're in bad shape. These are people who have absolutely no savings and a massive crisis happens to them. So we help a little bit.
Has it always been individually funded? Mm-hmm. I think that years ago the university gave us some money towards that. You might be right.
I think you are right. The university gave, I think, $20,000 or $25,000 to kick it off or something, and that was what was held in the long term investment pool, and that's gone.
How many years ago was that?
The CARE Fund switched over to not being administered by the EA. Like, it was more than that because it was the year that we came on to the EA, which we're in our fourth year. Yeah, we're in our fourth year now. So it was a good 4 years ago that they were talking about it. And
so, can you make it done?
Again?
It's been a while.
They can be problem with it.
Sure, it's zero balance and negative.
Well, I think part of the question is not necessarily about asking the university, because I think you said you're willing to ask them. But you know, the question of who is the fundraising component of the CARE Fund. You know, an administrative office took over administration of the grant with a committee made up of people around the university, but there is no real committee other than that, focusing on fundraising. And we're trying to, we try to help out with the CARE Fund grant, the auction. But.
The whole CARE Fund committee and the fundraising committee is only as good as the people who are enthusiastic about being on it. And I know that the EA is stretched because you all have committee roles and other committees that you're on by virtue of being on the EA. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if this is something that you want to take on. Either way, the CARE Fund fundraising arm, it has to grow somewhere. And if it's not through the EA, it will be through a different kind of outreach to volunteers in another way. So if there's no, there is no obligation that's being forced upon you. It's just if you feel this is appropriate for the EA at this time, or you can table it and we can come back when there's a different group of people and see what the interest is around it.
Is there a way to make it easy for employees to donate?
We've got payroll deduction. We offer payroll deduction. We cross that out.
Yeah.
It's online and people can go to the website and click to donate.
Can you send it someone United Way?
Sorry?
Yep.
It's not United Way.
It goes
through Alumni Affairs and Development, and you get your, you mentioned donation, you get a little thank you for donating $25.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe,
I
mean, if we decide
we want to take
a conference
flash, I have a link. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think you've
got to
give out a message
of
the front. Yeah, there can be a website with a link.
Well,
and I think it's
sign out
conference flash.
Yeah, that's
and
the goal of the committee. The committee puts together the communication around it, and we've done that several times.
I think the bigger question is that we obviously need a lot more money than a passive, you know, paw print. I mean, I think paw print flash and paw print and that kind of stuff is all great, but it's more passive.
Yeah. And realistically, it would be nice to raise the $8,000 plus an additional $15,000. My guess is that would cover us for a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I know everybody wants some of the A and D pies, but is there any way that you could talk to them about seeing if you could get it as an option that somebody might want to endow that, you know, and make a larger gift? Were they already making the university and feel that it's important that our employees are taken care of this as well as our faculty and our students and things like that? And then it becomes the, you know, X person, you know, care fund, and you name it after somebody, and they give the, you know, $100,000 sort of endowment gift. You know, because if we're, I would much rather try to tackle something like that at that level rather than trying to pick up the
$10
here and
the student whose life has been influenced by a staff member.
Mm-hmm.
That's who we would be looking for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
So I didn't know it much about CareFund until I came out of the EA, and so. This year for the auction and stuff, I mean, I went out and actively solicited stuff to put on the auction site from our department and everything like that. I don't know how many members do that already. So in a way, with our stuff, that's one way that we are helping solicit for the auction. And then secondly, when I was on cruise around the auction site, it was very difficult to get on.
Don't even talk to me about that. We're not using them again.
If we get some of these kinks worked out,
yep.
We may be able to make a lot more money.
I agree. So we need someone to take a leadership role, because the person who single-handedly did it this year is exhausted.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And is not willing to do it. She's done it twice now, mm-hmm. and she's just exhausted. And we have one person who's agreed to volunteer. I just don't know her level of commitment. Who works over another part of the university. So we're meeting with her. So we do have someone interested in maybe taking a leadership role.
But I understand you already have a committee made up of you and representatives from all these other branches that.
And we look at the application.
Okay.
And we get an application a week. I have three from this week.
Right now, I think the issue is that fundraising arm of the CARE Fund is very hodgepodge. You know, if people were saying, yeah, I'll do it or this or that, and it's, you know, kind of parceled out, that it needs to have a home and an owner. And I guess the question is the EA the logical place to own the fundraising piece of it? I mean, I think for very specific reasons, it's great that we are not overseeing the granting end of it for confidentiality and a variety of other reasons, but do we think the EA should own the fundraising leg of that?
So I guess my quick question with fundraising is, do we also assume that it's a debt?
No. No, because we're not, basically all we're saying is that we're willing to go out and try to get money for this grant program. But if there's not enough money in the grant program, it's those who are administering and distributing the funds who are not being fiscally responsible.
And that would be me.
That would be Beth, as I'm pointing it at Beth.
But I am being responsible because I'm giving out money to the poor.
No, but I
don't.
So, in our
employee
functions, when we have our employee days in the fall and the winter, that would be a great thing for the EA to man those tables and ask for money for the employee care fund. I mean, it would give us more purpose than just sitting there trying to bring out
right
one topic of what the employee assembly is.
One of the other things maybe we could consider is a matching gift with the university. Because I know a lot of people, you know, if the university says, hey, we'll come in $30,000 if you can raise it, you know, we'll match whatever you can raise. And I think when you go out and ask employees to contribute to employees, you know, everybody thinks they should make more money.
Right.
Everybody thinks they should have better quality of life. It's all pretty common. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think putting the employer behind the charge, because, you know, we feel it's important that employees support, and we'll double whatever gift you give to do that, you know, or match it or whatever it might be. I think that's the way to include the university, so employees don't feel like we're just asking them to
mm-hmm.
to give money.
Right.
They feel like they're not giving enough as it is.
So I guess, so here's what I'm going to say, just in the interest of time, because we do have a very full agenda. Do we think, as a group, that it's something that we should continue discussing about the EA potentially taking ownership of the fundraising piece of this?
Can I add an or?
Yes, or.
Or, just like there's an informal charter that an EA person is on that one committee,
right.
Just have an informal charter that when we have a more solid fundraising committee, that there's always one enthusiastic representative from the EA who comes in with all, you know, brainstorms here,
right.
And comes in with all the ideas, and then it just goes to the committee
mm-hmm.
to make it happen.
Do we have a follow-up?
No.
No.
Because what would it take to make a same committee? Like
of
the EA, like
how
we have
an
education.
But it would have to be added to the bylaws. I don't think you'd want to do that until you had an ad hoc committee for a year first to make sure that would be a regular standing function.
And we could do an ad hoc committee without too much difficulty.
Yes. You don't need to change bylaws for that. But there is already on the books of the emergency or the grant committee. I can't remember what it's called now,
yeah.
But
yeah.
I believe there's still a committee on the books which
okay.
has been
utilized.
Mm-hmm. So maybe
so we may already have some
bylaws and see if there's already something in there
okay.
that should be reactivated.
Right. So I will add this to our probably our January meeting, because I think our next meeting will be busy with Mary, but we'll get that back on.
So real quick, I like Greg's idea of the matching fund.
Yep, I got that idea.
I think it'd be a nice touch. Usually an annual fund is stuff, you have a trustee challenge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think we should have the trustees with some balance gift on their end, too.
Okay. Yeah. And if it counts for gift credit, it doesn't hurt A and B in their goals.
Right.
So it's a nice way to sell
that. Yeah, I think that would be a good idea, too.
And then I think the one other thing we want to do for our hotel friends here, whatever class that is that raises funds, yes, so we should find out about that. And
they raised $27,000 at their event.
So we want to get on with them. And so how do we do that?
Can I
have to wait. So what's the challenge? Do you have to wait for the next year to decide on the activity you have to submit a proposal? The difficult piece when I was talking to Rupert the following year is that they didn't want to make it seem like this is becoming it's a totally student run event.
Mm-hmm.
Like every year when they're going to the money, they didn't want to make it seem like this is a mandate coming from the professor that you're going to raise money for this thing to be a part of the school or something like that.
Gotcha.
So that was always one of the biggest challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But the students decide that. And I mean, I can always study this.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great, you know, if they're accepting proposals, I think it would be great to get a proposal in and see if they pick this cause. Okay. So, moving on, going into new business, I would like to move that we, because our time is limited, that we first look at the elections piece, and then we can go back to other reports from that. Is that something that would be okay with folks?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, so Curtis, you want to talk about elections, the election resolution?
We don't hopefully have received a resolution, so I guess at this time we need to move to discussion.
Is there any discussion? Thoughts, comments, changes? All right. I'll second that. All in favor of approving the resolution to move our employee elections to March, our organizational meeting to April and employee elections to March. Resolution to move organizational meeting to April and employee elections to March. Am I looking at the wrong thing?
February. The deadline to have the election completely wrapped up at the end of March, but the elections have to happen before the end of March. They will happen in January, but the charter change part is March.
Okay. So do we need to change this at all?
Right.
Okay. All in favor? Any opposed? Any abstain? Sixteen, 0-0. There you go. All right, that was easy. She brought it once. Okay. So let's see. Moving back to new business. Greg, do you want to do a UA report?
I will. So we've had two since our last meeting. One on the 13th, which we had the provost and Amira Magnum, the vice president for budget and planning. They came and talked about the new budget model. If anybody's not familiar with it, they provided a multi-page document that goes into a lot of depth about what the new budget model is. But basically, sort of the gist that I got out of it was they're looking to make sure that they're assigning appropriately the cost to the units, departments, or colleges that are consuming those. And the USP, or the University Support Pool, which is basically like the
Dean's tax.
The Dean's tax or the President's tax, the Central tax, which then goes back and then is sort of reallocated out based on need and things like that. It's complicated, and there's a lot of information online, and there's more information coming in. I won't go into a ton of detail, but if anybody has specific questions, I'm happy to take those afterwards based on their presentation. At the following meeting on the 27th, we heard from the Student Assembly Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion, and he shared with us their diversity plan. I think he sort of asked the UA to go back to their respective assemblies and encourage all of us individually to think about a diversity plan for our assemblies and how it can be included as part of our culture and doing things that are more inclusive and have a focus on sort of expanding and broadening our diversity reach. And then also Hugh, the VP for Facility Services, came, discussed specifically the lighting survey and the results from that, They've identified four projects that are the most urgent that they will be addressing. Two, I think, in this fiscal year, and then one either in the next fiscal year, but in the immediate sort of next 6 to 7 months. The State Science parking lot, the Big Red Barn area, the southwest corner. There's a parking lot on Thurston Avenue, which I wasn't too first and where he was talking about. And then sort of a maple ash, pine tree, the vegetable crop area, the walkway is another area that they've identified. We've talked about basically their funding for his department, and he mentioned that they have seen a 30 to 32% reduction over the last 3 years in the amount of money that they have available to run facilities, so he says it's ever more challenging. But he did say in his new budget request that they did request an allocation specifically to improve and increase lighting here around campus. A lot of discussion took place around it, but he said, safety was just priority one, and also caring from SAS, Student Academic Services Facility, was there and talked about, similar things and shared similar sentiments with you. He said, there's a lot of areas that come up each year, and they just sort of have to prioritize based on the tools they have available and what makes sense and what has the biggest safety risk. And they also include the police and their team in those discussions.
Greg, wasn't there also some stuff brought up about alternative energy?
I didn't hear that specifically, but I'm sure that that's something that they're considering, but I didn't hear them specifically talk about their alternative sources. I know the one thing they did talk about was light pollution, at some point, how much light is too much light, and when are we illuminating things, and things like that. So I know that you'll probably hear much more about lighting in the next couple months as they continue to follow up on that.
Thank you. Lavanya, you want to talk about education?
Sure. Just a quick, we mentioned the first time the semester after we moved on to the high level. 2 weeks back, and we are also meeting for the second time with the contents today. Well, one of the members actually opted out because of other work commitments. Just to give a heads up, so in March we had this survey about surveys, and the target population was the employee degree program graduates from 2008 to 2011. So right now we are working on how to improve the areas of concern that were elicited, which was flexibility and supervisory support and a copy board. The survey link has been updated onto the EA website under Medicine, and it is also there under the Education Committee page, just to give more visibility about the kind of work that we are doing. Well, we very well dedicated work among ourselves, thanks to very helpful Ed Committee members. One of the things that we wanted to do was to create a virtual activity group, which is basically a listserv, so that people who are taking classes or are in the EDP program will gain more information about who are the other people in the same group. I'm waiting on heads up from benefits regarding the number of candidates who dropped out of the EDP program specifically, so that this could provide useful feedback for future applicants. I'm also waiting on an update from HR regarding what exactly is included in the orientation brochure regarding benefits, and if we can actually highlight education benefits so that, again, for visibility. We are also still gathering information on whether completing an employee degree program or graduating from the program has increased their income level substantially, so that we could provide this information to the applicants. So we are working on this.
Thank you, Lavanya. Bridget is not here to talk about infrastructure committee.
To talk about that.
Oh, go ahead.
I was at the meeting, which gave me a quick debrief on what was discussed. Kind of going back to some of the other things you already spoke about, TCAT routes. There's been some requests from students, especially those living on Cornell properties a little bit further away from campus, graduate school and Skylar House, about the location of the CCAP bus stop, just review that, and closer and more convenient, more well-lit area, so we use it more effectively. Pretty much everything that was mentioned at the EUA about lighting was reiterated at the infrastructure committee. There's a lot of different projects that have been proposed over the year, and, you know, the budgets decrease, but, you know, everything that was at EUA is pretty much the same again. With regards to the sustainability, we discussed the revolving green fund. I'm not sure if someone came in and spoke about it, but it's a program where an initial startup amount is used to invest in green projects throughout campus, and then the investment is repaid in the energy savings from those investments, and that fund evolves and is used to fund future green projects, hopefully in an attempt to make the university more sustainable. That was about it.
Thank you. What I'd like to do now, since we have our guests here, you all, everyone's here?
Yes.
So what I'd like to do is we can go ahead and move into that, and if we have time, we can come back to our last two things at the end of our meeting. So, welcome.
Thank you.
How are you set up?
Yep. You guys are up?
We have a PowerPoint.
And we did pass around, Linda had sent us a link, web link for the new destination stuff, so folks have seen some information. I'm sorry. For those who haven't done them yet, right?
Is the old one out the window?
Old one is out the window.
Okay.
They changed the
We're off log, Greg.
Yeah.
Temporarily.
One day I'm drawing up the list. So just a quick thing while there's that note. Nancy's actually going to start to close you for your kind of time period, so competitors are getting contact whoever's on that week. So the photo shoot with new photos.
The other thing I can update as well, since we have a minute, is the EA Kudos website is now live, so you can go on and submit a kudos. You type in your email address, it'll put all your information in and whatnot, and that gets sent to Bridget, and an email will go out to the recipient and the sender. And also, the PowerPoint will be profiling a kudos awardee each month, so people will get a little recognition.
Where is that link? Is there a link somewhere?
It's on the EA website. Okay. I can send it to you, but yeah, it's on the website. So, AT?
Thank you. So thank you all for having us, and there are three of us are here. You'll see in the slide, so there's five of us who have a similar responsibility around the university. But toward your destination, how many of you have actually served it? And how many of you served on some kind of committee or council within your unit that did something about or contributed to it? Okay. So that's partly where we'll get to at the end is, so how can we play assembly and folks be involved more in the history itself? What we're going to talk about is just how this planning happens in terms of overall institutional diversity planning, and then what is the leadership structure right now for this new initiative, and what has happened so far in this process. The initial design of it, of course, was looking at what the already existing strategic plan, and the strategic plan has points in it that are directly related to diversity, in terms of both attracting and retaining people from a wide variety of backgrounds. And the real rationale for all of this is about how it makes all of our jobs and all of our work more excellent, better informed. We get multiple perspectives, we get a different view of things, we find out more about the world when we're working with a wide variety of people. So it is directly related to the university mission and what is happening in all of our various departments. So we're not talking about a goal to make the photographs look good. We're talking about a goal that makes us excellent. And that really, so it means that the environment has to be interactive. In other words, to learn from very few points and from a wide variety of people, you have to talk to them. You have to be engaged at a level that you're willing, you're open to hearing things from them, and you're open to sharing yourself and how you are unique and what is different about you, rather than coming to work and saying, well, at work I'm going to conform to some model of how to be a Cornellian or how to be a Cornellian worldview or something like that. But rather to bring more of yourself and to hear more about others as part of our work together. The initial effort is a structural effort. In other words, what we were trying to put into place is a framework under which all kinds of things can happen. So a lot of the first year is putting those things in place. So you can see, for example, that some of this was about pulling in new, either restaffing positions that were empty, due to the financial crisis, but also for other reasons, and then putting together ways that this interaction, this information, this climate can be re-energized. So the recruiter's position is reestablished, colleague groups have been formed, groups like veterans, like women of color, like LGBT folks, that mean even if in your unit there are very few people like you, there's a way within the university to get to know who else shares your background and experience. And again, reaching out to our alumni, recognizing that Cornell is not just a standalone place in Ithaca, but we have a lot of constituents. We have suppliers, we have friends of Cornell, we have alumni, we have parents, all those sorts of things. So reviving for a while some of the meetings of people who are responsible for diversity initiatives in their various units has stopped taking place. So an active effort to convene people where this is either a part of their job or it is a core commitment of themselves as community members, and so that there's a comparing of notes, a sharing of information, and a move towards what are the best practices or how can we get more from the sum of the parts. Some of this involves establishing new offices and centers. So one of the units that reports to me is the Office of Academic Diversity Initiatives, which was established in July of last year when I came to Cornell. But Cornell also repurposed the Alumni House, the 66 person, as a new cultural center. So that sort of doubles the level of support for undergraduate students, both on the social side in terms of the international center and on the academic side in terms of why. The provost then established the position that Yale Ravica has, and which is here today, to make sure someone is paying attention to diversity issues broadly across the faculty. Her previous job was focused on women in STEM disciplines, but now, you know, saying, well, that is a very important element of diversity, but there's many other diversity elements across the country that are important. Establishing the Dean of Students, Associate Dean of Students for Intercultural Programs, the Associate Vice Provost position that I have, the Associate Dean in the Graduate School, again, make sure that these positions are well distributed across the institution. But in thinking of that, we know that there is the not again factor. You know, some of you have been at Cornell long enough to say, we have a diversity initiative, you know, 5 years ago, 16 years ago, 12 years ago. And, you know, we recognize that. And that's why, as I said, one of the efforts of this is to make it structural, make it part of annual reporting, part of everyday practice, part of units all over the campus instead of something that is only happening at a publicity level or at a, you know, administrative level. But, you know, we're also saying this has had a hard task. So we're not just saying not again. We're also saying it's hard to move an institution and to change practices, especially when we're talking about interpersonal practices that are, you know, not necessarily written in a job description, but are very important to retention of folks, welcoming of people, you know, making everything accessible. Do you have a
Just real quickly, I noticed that all the deans of all the schools are, it's a metric of their performance review.
Yes.
How big of a pie is that?
And the same for all the vice presidents.
Thank you, all the vice presidents. So what's that? How big of a metric is it on their performance?
We'll find out.
Okay.
So we're in the first year, so the first time that metric will be applied to them will be June 30th of this year.
Okay, thank you.
And so when I say we'll find out, I don't mean to be flip about it. There is a commitment that it will be part of the effort. I think there's also an understanding that in the first year, people may have barely got things. Well, you know, not everybody is up to speed. That's understood. So while there needs to be progress, and we have done something, the bar will get raised as more of the campus understands exactly what's meant and what should be happening and what progress really is, how to measure. So the foundation obviously open doors, open hearts, open minds. I hope many of you have this poster in your workplace or you're familiar with this that was adopted 12 years ago. There's no need to change it. It's an excellent statement. So again, the idea of toward your destination is building on a foundation of initiatives that have happened. But if you're reading the text here, the idea is to get it so that there's embedded responsibility. That there's not somebody in Dave Hall running around inspecting everything, but that in each unit, every director, every dean, every vice president, every supervisor is starting to recognize, oh, this is something I should be paying attention to. This is something that needs to happen all over campus in all kinds of units. And we're enacting that even from the planning at the center. In other words, using diversity to promote diversity. Because part of the advantage is sharing the varied ideas, it seems to us it made no sense to have a single chief diversity officer. You know, if you have one vice president of diversity, you're not going to get diverse views. You know, now it's all in one package. So the idea that we have different expertise, we're responsible for different areas of the campus, makes sense. So that when we're thinking about institutional policy, at the table is somebody who is responsible for graduates and professional students, somebody from human resources, somebody from undergraduate education, somebody from student body. So this collective idea is really meant as also to show we mean embedded across the operations of the institution, and that to do well, we need a diversity of ideas.
And this concept of using diversity to promote diversity isn't just in terms of our own campus. We're also collaborating with Weill Cornell as well. They've been working on a diversity initiative for about 2 years, and so we're working together in terms of understanding how can we help each other, how can we benefit from each other. So we actually have three people there who are leading their diversity effort, and so we work closely with them, have meetings with them in terms of figuring out what we need to do. The diversity officers, and we call ourselves not chief diversity officers, but university and diversity officers, or UDOs, both here and for a while. We are actually part of a larger group, which is the University Diversity Council, and that includes those of us who are sort of at the entry level, so to speak, in terms of the leadership of the university, as well as those that we report to, and it also includes the president and provost. So this university council meets monthly in terms of trying to decide what we need to be doing as we move towards destination effort forward, and then meeting with the president and provost, and I should say provost, because it includes Weill Cornell's provost as well, meeting with them at least twice a year, so you say, here's where we are, here's where we need to go, here's some of the challenges that we are experiencing. It also includes Melanie Clarkford, and I mentioned that because one of the things that's new about this toward your destination effort is the measurement, that we want to be able to say we're moving the needle, that we're not just doing this because it feels good or because it looks good, but because we actually want to make a change for it. So part of what we're doing differently this time compared to in the past is we are looking at measurable initiatives moving forward. So in terms of sort of spreading the word, which is, as she mentioned, our goal is not to just have this going on within a particular prison and being done with it. We want this need to be spread out throughout the entire university for this to be effective. So we've got the five Ithaca diversity officers. We have the three Wild Cornell diversity officers, which we currently call the eight. Then there's a group of 10 where we've expanded beyond the diversity officers to include someone from admission, someone from the alumni world. We also have the staff diversity recruiting. We actually have diversity officers at two of the schools, engineering and Johnson, who also participate. This is monthly in terms of sharing what is it that we're hearing, what are some of the things that we can do to be more effective. Then the 18th, which is the University Diversity Council, which I had mentioned before. And then one I'm going to call 80 plus. This is the group that you can refer to, the University Diversity Network, which is individuals who have the responsibility, some responsibility related to diversity. We have students that are interested in diversity efforts. We actually have included folks from outside the university to participate in this. Again, meeting monthly in terms of sharing experiences, understanding what are some of the things we need to deal with, and hearing what people are sharing on the ground is kind of moving forward. So I'm going to let Yael kind of talk about the actual recent diversity initiative.
So we asked each college to come up with five mentors, or college or unit, so the president's not just the president's office, but also vice president. So colleges, vice president, and associate provost all had to come up with five measurable goals, and they could have chosen, they had to show composition and will in effect define each of those things. But there are three other principles that they could have chosen from to put that in constituents. The idea is that in order to be in that, this is actually yours, that we're trying to encompass many principles and many constituents in this effort, but we want accountability there for accountability. So each school, as I said, has to come up with five annual initiatives, and the four principles are composition, which is demographic. And people tend to lean towards the measure of what the data that we do have, which often is race and gender, but we encourage people to look more broadly and think about other forms of diversity. There's engagement, which is personal, social, and professional commitment to the institution. And then there's inclusion, which really speaks about the climate, about how people feel here. And we've noticed as initiatives came back, that there is some confusion between those two, communication and inclusion. And then achievement, whether level of attainment so in the student realm, at graduation, completion, and the faculty realm, funding and awards, and in the status, it's those who move through ranks and to be promoted or anything else. These are the seven constituent groups that people could have picked from in the colleges. So a dean could have picked students, postdocs, faculty, his or her staff. And also off campus completely. So you can see who and his parents, or not extended community parents alone. So you can see that this is kind of an ambitious approach. So we asked individuals to come up with this menu of 5 times 4 times 7 constituents, the NBA constituents. And we got 158 initiatives, including 158 initiatives from 27 colleges and unions, and so there are 10 colleges and schools, plus all the offices of the president and the provost and Wild Medical Cornell. And that happened in July 1st. And this is what people came to that. This is what the initiatives were. So out of the 158 initiatives, 22% of them focused on achievements, 32% on composition, 32% on inclusion, and 14% on engagement. And in terms of inclusion and engagement, there was a lot of initiatives on training, training staff, training faculty. Composition focused mostly on pipelines, so when you're hiring faculty or you're trying to get students, how do you make sure that your pipeline is richer so that you can make more diverse choices. Achievement is again trying to figure out ways to get better completion rates for undergraduates, to better funding, how do we get more faculty to raise more funds. In terms of absolute numbers, you can see that there are the numbers. So the majority, again, of the initiatives were inclusion, training, and composition. And then in terms of constituencies, staff were the largest focus, a lot of training. And in the first year, they couldn't pick anything, and so a lot of colleges picked training in terms of perspective from knowledge tends to focus on staff. 20% was the faculty, and then the students were 20% undergraduates and 14% and the postdoc, which is the smallest, which is close to the on-campus as a smallest number. Yeah. So you can see the breakdown. And as you can see, I don't know if you have any questions about that at this point. Mm-hmm. We basically did not give any guidance. We allowed individuals to pick whatever.
Just asking, maybe the three of your opinion. How do you feel about that breakdown? Is it a good breakdown? Would you like to see more initiatives in some areas and less in others? I mean, what is a good benchmark there?
I think in terms of just the number of people on campus, that's not that bad because the largest constituency are students that get about 15 faculty on campus, 10 faculty. Of course, from the faculty point of view, since I am in charge of faculty, I was disappointed because we are at the point in our Cornell life where there's a huge turnover, right? A lot of retirement, so I would like to be much more aggressive. But in some ways, that's fine, that's what the college is, but I still have my position, so I push regardless of what they do. I still push. That's my job, to push. I think similarly, any of the other four would tell you, yes, they're doing, some of them are doing the low-lying food. That's fine for this year. They're making some effort before it wasn't even in the conversation, but we're still pushing other forms of.
The only thing I would add is this is number of initiatives, not how running the test or anything. So we're looking, as we develop the quality, I think all of us would be happy at being effective initiatives, not necessarily.
That would actually make a difference. But in my mind, we're kind of saying, training is low hanging fruit. There are colleges around this campus, from my point of view. I've been on campus 4 years trying to do gender diversity, but who would have never talked to us, never really cared, and suddenly I have calls and saying, let's have this conversation. So, in my mind, at least it's bringing the conversation just to the faculty realm. Finally, there's some individuals who if I sit with a group of 20 associate leads and I talk about recruitment and what their role is pushing for these pipelines, and someone who's never thought about it and who isn't known for being such a sense to me, fantastic about it in the next last 20 years. I need to do more than I feel like this is just important. Just in terms of the number of initiatives per constituent, how the percentages translate gives you some ideas of the magnitude of the University Diversity Council in coming up with the new destinations and also getting feedback, and we realized that we needed a process in the product to get perfect, and so we are constantly consulting with various groups, and this is what what do you call it, the sheep of wheat? You see that in the middle, there's diversity, this is basically the university diversity council plus the diversity community, but we're trying to reach out to as many groups as possible. That's why we make the, these presentations. We realize that communication was relatively, you know, needs to be ramped up so that people will know what's going on. So these are the various groups, you know, staff meetings, faculty senate, any, and if you look at this at some point and say, hey, there's someone missing from this group, then you almost tell them. Well, yeah, please.
I see a very glaring omission there of the trustees that actually run the school. Nowhere is the
right.
We
report.
They don't report to
that.
We can't.
It would help your. I think it would help your cause because I go to and know some of them that if the trustees get together and the room is full of white men, which it pretty much is now, if they could have a little diversity, it would help your cause in the long run, so that you can say they're making an effort, and this is where these initiatives are starting to come from, is that group of people. If they could diverse, it would make your life easier, and we could use them as an example of the efforts you guys are putting forth to make things done. So
there is a working group of trustees that come that argue at least twice a year, and so we do share with them in terms of what's going on, and they give us feedback. And, you know, the last meeting, they gave us great feedback about this whole issue of accountability. So this is all nice, but we've got to have something strong in terms of holding people accountable. So we do connect with at least a group of, I think about 15 or so, the trustees in terms of the issue.
But how diverse is that group that you're talking to?
That's the question that you brought
that's,
up.
That's my point.
But I think that that's where it can start. And if you kind of looking around the table and saying there's not a great deal of diversity here and expanding it.
I think that their initiatives that you're reporting to them is great, and don't get me wrong, but I think it would, you should say that they're...
Say that
this is the group that...
I hear from my constituents frequently, it's just like, well, this is great, you know, we do our best, but I don't see diversity kind of trickling down.
Right. So, we think, as I said, that the pushing of this problem started to inspire other groups on campus. So, the students had the people's school teaching on bias last month, I think. We have the student assembly created as the vice president for diversity initiative. There's various other organizations reviewing diversity positions. The diversity community, the 80 plus, which hasn't met for some time, met again, has re-energized, but there's lots of difficult conversations and kind of trying to redefine the purpose of such a large community. So it's been a very involved process. Bright Horizons has created a statement on diversity as well as various collaborations around campus. So we feel that the process of diversity is starting to be energized and move. In terms of the process itself, the completed steps, We have now a university diversity webpage, diversity.cornell.edu. There's also the diversity metrics. If you go to irp.cornell.edu, there's a diversity dashboard. There is data that was very hard in the past to reach. Now you can reach them in menus that you can kind of say subgroups. And I can tell you it's been very useful for me. I have to present to the dean the artifacts research recently. And I could show them, you know, the proportion of women and minorities in every in staff, women and staff, faculty, students, grad students, and I think seeing that on page and what it means for where leadership should be was very useful. We hosted two measurement meetings for the people who are in charge of doing the initiative of helping them understand what measurables really means. And in September of last month, we got all those 27 unit heads, deans, presidents, vice presidents, to come and have a conversation about what this looks highlighting the best kind of the initiatives that were bold and the processes, because we understand that the processes of how people can
came up with those initiatives were very different in various units. So it's highlighting more inclusive processes than in some of the units. And then in October, we reported to the Board of Trustees, and in January, we're bringing these groups that are in charge of the initiative back together to discuss progress, but also starting to think they need in June 30th to supply new lists of initiatives, so they need to come up with some thoughts and ideas. The next step is the University Diversity Council is looking at the past initiatives coming into the next spring term and trying to highlight gaps in those initiatives, and also show, you know, initiatives that worked out that some of the other colleges might want to adopt. We are trying to be better about communicating. We're working with university communications about communicating better the whole concept of the new destinations and the program. We are at a January meeting with individuals, and we are also compiling a diversity academy, which is training for various constituent groups on diversity issues. So the question is, how can the employee assembly help us in various aspects of this? One is, as we said, I think I was actually happy to see that as many people have heard about the new destination here in this room, but I think that with help of individuals, we'll continue to help us communicating about it to this gap population, encourage people in your units to participate in the process, ask questions, look at the website, the diversity website has all the initiatives, to question your diversity group. And then, of course, if individuals encourage supervisors to allow staff to participate in the various training and other initiatives. And, of course, just like the student assembly has a diversity officer, I think in some ways we think that if we had someone who was linked directly in the student assembly to the University Diversity Council and the university community, it would be very helpful. So, any questions, we're happy to answer.
I'll just point out that Curtis is on the committee.
All right.
Yes? Yes, sir? So we got one done. I think one of the things, just I'll throw out that Bridget and I were talking about here, is, you know, other than, you know, what we're hearing through the EA, we're not hearing in our individual colleges about diversity stuff. And she's in Calvin Arts and Sciences, which are two fairly large components of campus, and we're not hearing anything as staff. And I don't know how that is for anyone else.
Well, Nasambi Ricketts is on your committee of 8 plus 6 minus 2, whichever one that one is. Anyway, so Nasambi's done a whole senior staff-wide presentation of the initiatives, but I don't know if like the rest of the business school staff. I guess just his pockets depend on where.
Right, and it's very interesting, though, when we wrote this out, for example, I sent an email to 1,600 faculty, and yes, there's still faculty there. So I understand that email is not the way to go, but and we have, you know, bi-monthly workshops, so in the beginning of each workshop, I basically introduce this to the group who is there at that point. But communication is a challenge for such a big institution, and how often do you ignore messages? So we just have to keep on pushing that. And I think to a certain extent, I mean, arts and science is an example of the college where the initiatives were very top down. I think when it's a more, that's part of why we argue and advocate in the unit for a broad process that could kind of engage many people and communicate.
I'm just thinking of the fact that so many of the initiatives are staff linked, and, you know, a huge portion of the pie is staff linked.
Yeah.
There's definitely a disconnect with the staff.
Right. And then there are colleges that are very staff linked.
Mm-mm.
It's called
Peter Lacey.
Oh,
okay.
Have a diversity council. And so those individuals are supposed to be able to help you understand what's going on within your college or unit. So, that's my program.
in almost all of our learning curve has been each thing that we sort of rolled out and designed, since people typically don't say no. They say, oh, what a great idea. And then 3 months later, oh, you mean I was actually supposed to do that? You know? So it's been, you know, because it is new. You know, and we've had good backup so that when people try to hand in their annual reports without this, the provost and president said, you're not done with your annual report. Like, that isn't some separate thing. Mm-hmm. So they're sort of learning, okay, and obviously for initiatives to be effective, people have to know about them, and the units have got to communicate them, you know, and maybe they'll learn that over there. you know, course of this year, but I think, you know, one of the helpful points is if somebody in the unit is asking, so what about those initiatives? They'll be like, oh, you mean, I guess we should be, you know, doing something. Mm-hmm. They are all online on the diversity.
You can look up see what the college is doing, meeting. And you can send your liaison to your state a message from saying, what about that? How did this come about?
I was just curious.
Yeah.
And keep in mind that all of the colleges and universities are submitting a report at the end of the year, and that too will be going on the web.
Right, but in terms of that, so we had a university diversity council meeting last week with the president and provost, and we did ask, you know, what's their accountability? And the one thing which I think I'm internalizing is that we want people to take risky initiatives. So we have to realize that they might not 100% realize, and then we don't want to penalize them immediately, but we want to see progress.
Mm-hmm.
If
we learn from the state,
let's
learn.
Okay. So, yes.
You have pizza that's
getting cold.
And I think we are out of time. So, thank you for coming in. If anybody has questions, you can. All right, so I will table the last two things on our agenda, but please take some pizza with you when you go. And I'll be emailing our next meeting. We have Mary with us, so we'll want to talk about what we want her to talk about. Maybe we can do that on email. Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.